from KQED.
A few years ago, I interviewed a man named Joe. I met him at an alcohol treatment center at the San Francisco VA Medical Center, where he had come to dry out. He was 71 when we spoke, but he remembered his first drink.
Just remember having the really warm feeling of I think it was probably ginger and seven, something like that. Yeah.
His drinking became chronic. It got so bad that it scared his wife, he said, especially when he started having blackouts.
No, you just don't remember, and you get told what you did.
Like what? I asked. The question seemed to bother him.
Things I don't really want to even mention. Okay?
It was obvious there were huge consequences to Joe's drinking, and yet he kept doing it. And for scientists who study alcoholism and other addictions, this is really interesting behavior. It's the ability to recognize that something is a bad idea and then to do it anyway.
Something switches where our immensely capable brain is still immensely capable, we're just not in the driver's seat anymore.
This is Woody Hopf. He's a scientist at the Gallo Center. It's a research institution affiliated with UCSF and focused entirely on studying the brain science of addiction. And Hopf says that doing this, essentially overriding our better judgment, can be traced to a specific set of places in the brain.
And these are areas that most of the time are there to tell you, okay, there's something bad, get away. But they have been co-opted to do exactly the opposite. Normally, they would help you avoid what is bad. Here, they're helping you rush right into what is bad.
So the question that faced Hopf and others was this. Now that we know where these parts of the brain are, how can we stop them from being co-opted? In other words, could you take someone who is making bad decisions about drinking alcohol and essentially get them to make good decisions instead? So they started with rats, and in a paper published this month in the journal Nature Neuroscience, they say they've been able to do this. I asked Hopf to start from the beginning.
How do you make an alcoholic rat?
Rats actually do it themselves. Rats like to drink. And so I think
they like to drink alcohol.
They like to drink alcohol. That's right. It depends on the concentration of alcohol. What we give them is essentially a vodka on the rocks. Monkeys like intoxication. You know, elephants, horses.
Really,
that's part of our brain is in search of the perpetual buzz in a certain way. So
wow.
Hedonism seems to be pretty common in mammals,
species,
at least.
Yeah. So creating an alcoholic rat takes one more step, though, right? You have to give them alcohol and then take it away. How does that work?
Every other day, basically, they get access to drinking for an overnight session. And so, and this is part of the evidence that it's the binge drinking that really is what's insidious. You learn, I better drink a lot now because now I have the opportunity.
So with the rats, you wanted to then do one more thing. You wanted to make it so that drinking came with a conflict, sort of to mimic this idea that it was a bad idea to drink. So how did you do that?
You can put something that tastes bad in the alcohol. Rats won't drink it if you make the alcohol taste bad. But after enough period of binging, you know, after a couple months of this, now they're willing to drink it even though it tastes bad.
So and you've created for them that conflict.
We've created for them that conflict. That's right. Once they've reached that time, we know they have biochemical changes, molecular changes in their brain. A whole different brain circuit is involved.
The next step, he said, was changing that brain circuit. And this is where a very recent technology comes in. It's called optogenetics. It was developed at Stanford, and it lets researchers essentially turn brain cells on and off remotely using a beam of light.
We can shine light then into these connections from these cortical areas and specifically turn off just a few of the many, many thousands of wires in the brain. And that is sufficient to dramatically drop their compulsive drinking.
So they drink alcohol when it tastes good. They don't drink it when it tastes
bad. That's right. Exactly. And if there's no conflict with it, they're still happy to drink it. It's just that if you add a conflict to it, when you're sort of modeling that compulsive aspect, which is so potent in driving relapse in humans, now we can sever that connection.
You can't do this in humans, at least not yet. But what Hopf and others are excited about is that there are some already existing drugs that, again, in rats, seem to affect the same part of the brain in similar ways.
What's great for us is that we have a drug that will block the action of those excitatory molecules, FDA-approved drugs that would do the same thing.
They'd like to try these drugs in humans, but the key, he says, is doubt.
You have to be in conflict about your addiction, because if you're not in conflict, you don't recruit your cortical areas.
In other words, the drug would be targeting a part of the brain that isn't really active.
If they don't doubt, nothing will happen.
Clinical trials can take about 5 years. The team hopes to get started soon. I'm Amy Standen, KQED News.
Support for KQED science and environment coverage is provided by the Videz Family Foundation, the Wincote Foundation, and the Amgen Foundation.